Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Well, straight from metropolitan area of Clover, South Carolina, we have Dr. Sheila Quinn with us. She is the superintendent of the Clover School District, a job she's had for 4 years, two of which now has been as the leader of all the COVID restrictions and what have you. How you doing through all of this? You all right?
You know, I'm looking back at that first year, and it truly was a honeymoon year, considering that the last two have been fraught with all kinds of concern. But I think we've weathered it very, very well.
Good for you. I asked you before we went on the air, how much, what percentage of your time, roughly, do you think you're spending on COVID stuff?
And honestly, I told you conservatively, probably 70% right now. And that is because at the opening of school, so many decisions that you have to make, you have to factor through the COVID protocols. And that takes time. And every email that you respond to takes time. And so it really is dominating a lot of our thinking.
So you're not quite a week into school yet. Any issues, any outbreaks, any problems, or are we just everything running?
Everything is running, but we're starting to see an uptick in quarantines, as you can imagine. Our numbers are not terrible at any particular school, but as one case pops up, then you have to send home a number of children for quarantine. So we prepared for that. We did it pretty well last year, but it's just we thought we would be out of this game, and to be back in it so quickly is unfortunate.
So how do you handle this? I mean, if the teacher at Clover High School says, you know, Sally Smith here has just tested positive, first of all, are you testing students regularly?
We aren't testing like routine asymptomatic testing, but we do have a testing center in our district. So if a student is positive, obviously we're quarantining other students, and they can go to our district testing site to get a test if they need to.
So if a student just feels ill and they go home, how do you know whether it's COVID-related or just an upset stomach?
You know, what we say to our families is if you have any symptoms, and we have the symptoms listed, stay home a day or two and monitor those. If the symptoms, two or more of those secondary COVID symptoms appear, go ahead and go get a test. We're glad to provide a free test for you at our district testing site. And that has worked. Our families have responded very well. You know, we used to say, tough it out, come to school, you know, and we used to tell our staff, tough it out, come to work. And now we don't say that. Now, you know, better to err on the side of caution and stay home a day and figure out if this is something worse.
So if Sally Smith gets tested and Sally does have COVID, What kicks in at that point?
Well, you have to do a series of contact tracing. And so any student that's within, or staff member that's within 3 feet for more than 15 minutes. So on buses, you can imagine we've got, use our iPads to take a picture of where students sit so that we can easily go back and contact trace. Or we use the video cameras on the bus, having to do that with some of our sports teams. And so anyway, those students who are identified or staff members who are identified, they do have to go home for 14 days unless they've been vaccinated. And in that case, they're exempt. But we say that's a good thing. You can come on back to school, but it's really best practice to take a test 3 days in just to be sure you're not asymptomatically positive as a vaccinated person. And so that is new. That's the new layer this year that we didn't have last year because we didn't have widespread vaccinations.
And what happens to that child's education while they're sitting at home for 14 days playing video games?
Well, our teachers have become very adept at flipping learning. So what happens is students are eligible if they're home on COVID for any COVID reason, positive, isolation, or quarantine. They can WebEx into our classes and see the direct instruction lesson and then upload their work online, and teachers can get it every night, grade it, give feedback, and get it right back to our students. And our board had great foresight. They also passed a telework policy. So if you're eligible to work from home, and several of our staff members are, then a teacher who is quarantined can actually teach from home. And on our very first day of school, I went to every single building. And when I was at the high school, I walked in a room, and there the teacher was up on the board from home teaching her lesson. And the students were sitting in class, and we still have to have a sub monitoring the room. But the students are still benefiting from the teacher being able to work from home. So appreciate our board allowing that to happen.
Golly, hey, boy, oh boy. It's quite a, it's a Ouija board. You just keep moving around. So hopefully the way you're set up, you don't see, I mean, when these outbreaks occur, you can handle it almost like a class at a time or something like that?
Yeah, our plan actually allows us to be very nimble, and we've set some markers. If we have 20% of a positive, 20% of the class who tests positive, or 10% of a grade level, or 10% of a school, we can convert either that class or that grade level or the school to e-learning for a 10-school-day period to allow there not to be widespread in that school. So, again, everybody just converts and learns from home for that period of time. That way we don't have to plan for whole district closures. So if there's not a problem out in our Bethany Elementary School, that school gets to keep running. If there's a problem on the other side of the district, we can deal with that problem there. That's worked for us last year. We had to close classrooms. We never had to close a school. But we did have to close classrooms several times. And when I say close, convert to e-learning is really what I mean.
So what are you seeing as far as students coming to school? Do you see as many masked as not masked?
You know, I did a kind of a look test when I was out. First day of school, I went to every single building. I stayed about 45 minutes in every building, walked in all classrooms. I would say to you about 30 to 40% of our elementary students are wearing masks, and I wasn't surprised by that because there's not a vaccine available for that age group. I would say about 25% of our middle school students, again, these are rough numbers, were wearing masks. And then high school, I would take that number down to 10 or 15%. So, again, they've had the opportunity to be vaccinated longer, so that may be why. They're also a little more cavalier, and so that may be why. But our good, about 40% of our staff are wearing masks, and I know, you know, last year we saw a number of them go get vaccinated, so we're not certain how many have been because we're not asking that, but I feel like most of them have done what they need to do to take care of themselves.
We all remember what it's like to be a teenager. We're just invincible. Nothing, none of this will ever happen to us.
That's exactly right.
Wow. All right. So now the one area that we didn't talk about is how are you handling sports? I mean, we're into the football season. First Friday night of football is this Friday.
Yeah, our sports teams really worked the COVID protocols very nicely last year, and we just carried those through this year. So, you know, there is active separating of different teams. So defense practices over here, offense practices over here. Yes, you do have to bring them together on occasion, but you try very hard to keep them in stations. So if you have to contact trace, you don't take out the whole team. You take out those individuals that you convert to e-learning for those individuals that were in close contact. But the biggest part that's been difficult is the bus transportation. And that is because, you know, when you are a growing district, space on buses is very difficult. And so for our sports teams, as well as just our regular transport, we're having to do a good bit of quarantining because of close contacts on the bus.
Are you still running half capacity on buses so there's some separation? Or?
No, we are 100% capacity on buses because there was no way we could operate our schedule without full bus capacity this year. Our level 2 plan does take capacity down, and we actually converted this week to our level 2 schedule. Our level 2 schedule has elementary starting at 7:30, middle school starting at 8, and high school starting as late as 9 o'clock, so we can split to 3 bus routes. So we actually took our level 2 bus plan and our level 2 school schedule and put it in our level 1 model this year just because of congestion on our buses. And that is largely due to growth. We grew by 600 students this year, and we asked those students to register for their bus seat, and we had about 1,000 who didn't register. And maybe because they're new to our district and, you know, getting the word out is very, very hard in our district. We don't have a newspaper to put messages out in. So I think some of them had a difficult time with that.
Now, with this, going back to sports, you're okay for this week's football game so far.
So far.
But
knock on wood.
You had a rivalry game scheduled for next Friday, and that's been postponed.
Postponed for now. We will see. You know, we're having to contact trace now more than ever, and I can certainly understand if any school we're playing lets us know their contact tracing. We want to be sensitive to that, and so we're going to have to do that next week and maybe postpone that rivalry game.
Ugh. Now back to the masks. On the school buses, do they not have to wear a mask?
It is not. No, it's mask optional.
Really?
And so you could choose to implement mask on school bus as a requirement. The difficult part of that is it doesn't save you on contact tracing. So it doesn't matter if you have a mask on or not. It matters if you're within 3 feet for more than 15 minutes. So if you and I are sitting within 3 feet of one another and we're both masked and I'm positive, you're still going home for 14 days. So the mask becomes not the pivotal thing there. Now, for spread, for preventing maybe me giving it to you, masks are very, very solid for that. And that's been the reason why we've said, please put your mask on. We're not requiring it because state law won't allow it, but we are highly encouraging it.
You really could, and I asked this question the other day to one of the other superintendents or Dr. Hine or whatever, it's gotten to be such a big part of what you do that you could really use another you just to do COVID stuff.
Our head nurse for our district and our public information officer and our HR director and really all of us really share this COVID work because it is such a big thing. No one person can take it all on. So our HR people really work with our staff positives. Our nurses really work with our student positives. And so everybody's got this division of labor of communication protocols that have to happen. So it's a big job, and it does. It requires a village to pull it off.
Now, Clover School District obviously has gotten taken advantage of these extra dollars that are floating around from the federal government, state government, what have you.
Yes.
What has that total pot come to over the last couple of years?
Well, the first year, ESSER round one was about $704,000, and we really used that to gear up to go digital because that was the first year of the pandemic, so converting a lot of our digital platform, also for a lot of PPE. We did all the masks, all the shields. So that first round was really gearing up for this pandemic from an e-learning standpoint and a safety. Round two for us was $2.8 million, and we did 100% of that for learning loss. So we had the spring was, we were out of school from March to June. We realized we had some kids that kind of got lost in that. We started in the summer bringing them back. And so all of ESSER 2 was about tutoring, small group instruction, extra math interventionists, reducing class size so we can work with kids. So that money is all earmarked for learning. ESSER 3 for us is $6.4 million, and we're going to replicate for another year all of our learning loss initiatives and then use the rest for ventilation. And so we've got some older schools that need HVAC system changes. We're going to work through those as well as some air filtration methods. And that's going to eat every bit of that money. So that's $4.5 million in air ventilation.
Good Lord. Wow. Unbelievable.
We can get the parts, assuming, you know, we can get it all done when the money has to be spent by 2023, and getting things delivered now is difficult.
Well, I'm sure that they'll probably give you an exception on that based on all the supply chain issues.
Yes.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break, because when we come back, we're going to talk about all these additional students that you have to educate and how we're going to do that as we continue our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments of Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Now, Dr. Quinn understands what we do here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week, and the way we do it, 1, 2, 3, slice, slice, slice.
Garden, 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 garden.
Back after these words. All right.
If it's 12:30, It's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Why do you take investment advice from a mutual fund or insurance salesman when you can work directly with a genuine money manager? If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see the difference for yourself. 324-5044 or go online to AndersonGriggs.com.
Water, fire, mold, and storms cause property damage every day. When it happens to you, it's no time for second best. That's why insurance professionals trust the locally owned and family-run Paul Davis Restoration of Rock Hill. This is Gina Rogers. Paul Davis is committed to providing extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Our team is highly qualified and trained to handle each situation with care and professionalism. When disaster strikes, call Paul Davis. We are here to help. 329-1140 or pauldavisrockhill.com.
Save on your monthly mortgage payment with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage from Founders Federal Credit Union. Take advantage of low rates while they're still around, and you'll also have no private mortgage insurance costs. The application process is easy, and your mortgage is serviced completely by Founders and always stays with us. Relax your home. For more, visit foundersfcu.com/30. Membership qualification required. Credit evaluation, underwriting requirements, terms and conditions apply. Institutions, NMLS identifier number 410-646.
When your health needs attention, you'll find compassionate care at Piedmont Medical Center. We make it convenient to treat emergencies with online check-in and locations in Rock Hill and Fort Mill. Or if you live with a heart condition, our cardiologists provide advanced treatment options to help you live better. And for pain that slows you down, a minimally invasive surgery can help speed you on to recovery. We are your community built on care.
PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
We're glad to see things are getting back to normal, and it's great to see everyone eating in and us getting a chance to catch up with y'all. This is Charlie Ruffalo. If you don't have time to sit and enjoy your lunch with us, I would suggest you order online at mysubstationii.com, and you can be in and out of the store in under 5 seconds. Just give us enough time to make your order before you arrive. We're open Monday to Saturday, 10 to 10, and we're still able to do catering 7 days a week. Once again, I want to thank you for your support through this pandemic. It means a great deal. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. Dr. Sheila Quinn is with us, superintendent of the Clover School District, which is growing by leaps and bounds. You were surprised by the increase this year?
Pretty surprised, and we knew that it was going to be an interesting year for growth. We plan to grow by 200 to 250 students per year. That's been our track record. But we had a couple of anomalies. We had 300 students who chose homeschool last year, so we had to call all of those individuals or at least email them, try to find out if they were coming back. So we spent a lot of time doing that, and lo and behold, behind those 300 coming back were 600 more students. So we didn't grow by 300, 200, we grew by 600 students. So we're up just at 9,100 students this year.
9,100 students, wow. Well, that leads us to something that's taking the other 30% of your day after you finish with COVID stuff, which is a very important bond referendum coming up next month. What day?
September the 18th, Saturday. Unfortunately, there's a Clemson home game. Well, not unfortunately, go Clemson Tigers, but there is a Clemson home game. So we're making sure we get the word out that you can vote ahead of time. You can start voting as of today if you want to drive over to York and go to the voter registration office and go ahead and get your vote in. That's possible. But Saturday the 18th is the official day.
All right. So, why don't we go through this? The size of the referendum?
$197 million. It's by far the biggest bond referendum we've had in Clover School District history. It would have been somewhere in the 230 range, but our board has identified from our building fund about $35 million that we're going to be able to contribute to this, to the projects. So it's $197 million. The big ticket item there is high school number 2. It'll be going up along Highway 274 on our Daimler property, and elementary school number 8, which will also be on that site. And middle school number 3 will actually take our ninth grade campus that's right beside Clover High and turn it back into a middle school. It used to be Clover Middle, and before that, Clover Junior High. So it will go back to a middle school, and that'll save our taxpayers the $50 million it'll take to build a middle school. We'll just have to put a few renovations into that building.
All right, so it's high school number 2. Mm-hmm. And what was the second building?
Elementary school number 8.
Elementary number 8.
And middle school number 3 is a conversion from the ninth grade campus back to a middle school.
Isn't that something? Right.
Now, those
Lead
are
on back.
Those are our big three projects. There are three others.
All right,
major
go
things.
Ahead.
The next is we want to make sure Clover High School has some 21st century learning upgrades, because anytime you talk about high school number two, there's always questions and comparisons between high school number one. We've lived that in Rock Hill.
Hallelujah.
So we absolutely want to do some really neat things at Clover High. One of our older elementary schools out on the western side is Bethany Elementary. It's out there near kind of the Blacksburg line and the Kings Mountain side, and we're going to do some upgrades at Bethany for its cafeteria and some extra classrooms and science labs. And then finally, the most interesting one is we had an old warehouse downtown Clover. That's our IT center. It houses all of our expensive technology equipment, and it is unair-conditioned and needs fire alarm system upgrades. And we knew when we went in to do all that work, they were going to make us upgrade the whole facility. So the board really wrestled with, is it wise to put money in this old warehouse, or can we do something that the community could enjoy? And so downtown near our stadium, we're building an innovation and technology community center that will house our special education offices, our IT offices, and warehouse on the bottom floor, professional development space, kind of the size maybe and scope of a Baxter Hood, but not quite, just that big main ballroom area that you can break up into smaller for professional development, place we can house a prom, place we can have community meetings, reunions, just a facility that we think our chamber would use to attract businesses and have meetings there. So we're really excited to the opportunities in downtown Clover for that.
Well, hats off to your predecessor, Mark Sosny, for getting that land a long time ago.
Absolutely.
Land is a premium.
You're exactly right. They're not making any more of it over there, and the good stuff is getting taken pretty quickly. So, yes, our board has been very proactive over the years of looking for land way ahead of time. And so, yeah, we've had this piece of property for about 10 years and excited to see it get developed.
So your projections on your school population, you're up 600 this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are the experts telling you? You're going to get another 600 next year?
Well, and that is the million-dollar question. What we do know is there are about 3,000 homes that have already been approved to be built through 2027 in our district. And we also know through our impact fee study that we did that a single home produces on average 0.43 children. So we can begin to know that, you know, somewhere in that cone of uncertainty in your attendance lines, or your enrollment line, excuse me, we're going to probably be somewhere between 10 and 13,000 students in the next 10 years. So, I mean, they're going to keep coming, and we think other developments are going to come online at some point, as in addition to these 3,000 that are already coming our way and approved. So we've got to be ready for that.
Now, you went to the county council, and we're looking for, some help with impact fees. You had the same company do all the studies that had done them for Fort Mill and others, but you didn't come out the way you'd hope you'd come out on that thing.
Yeah, we got a little less than we qualified for in the study. We got about a fourth. So we've got about $4,000 per single family home coming to us now in impact fees. A little more than $2,000 per mobile home, and a little less than $2,000 for townhomes or apartments. So between January 15th, when we could start collecting, 2021, and today, we're about at $700,000. And I've been really trying to explain to our public, so I appreciate you asking this question, how we'll use those funds to help the taxpayers. So when we get, if assuming this bond passes and we can borrow up to $197 million, we will not borrow it all in one lump sum. We'll borrow it in several draws. And whatever that last draw is that we borrow, however much we've collected in impact fees, we'll reduce that last draw by that impact fee amount. So the taxpayers probably won't see $197 million borrowed from us. Whatever we've collected in impact fees, let's call it $2 million, let's call it $3 million, we'll reduce what we borrow in that last draw so that they'll never have those dollars.
Now, your $197 million can only be used for bricks and mortar. You're going to have to staff these schools. And I don't know what the number is on that, but it's got to be in the millions.
Yeah, our budget right now, just operational budget, is about $97 million. So you can imagine when we put three new schools online, there'll be an impact there. The elementary school will come online 24-25, assuming the bond passes, and the high school and the middle school will come online in 25-26, and that'll be the big year where we see a jump up in our operating costs because we'll have to staff a high school and staff a third middle school.
And then you will have the thrill of your life. You thought COVID was just absolutely the greatest thing you could deal with. You'll have the fun of redistricting.
Yes. A lot of questions about that. So that that's the reason why we want to make sure Middle School 3 in every way feels and looks like Middle School 1 and 2 in our district, Clover and Oak Ridge, and that Clover High School has the 21st century amenities that the new high school will have, because we want our families to know there are no bad schools in Clover School District. I can say that honestly, but there are comparisons between facilities, so we have to make sure that there are parity and comparability in all of our facilities.
Well, you better make doggone sure that your athletic facilities are exactly like they are at Clover High School, because you will be hearing it.
You are reading my mind, Manny Kimmel, and we are trying to make sure of that. You need to kind of look at our bond projects and look at what we're doing at Clover High School. It's going to be really neat.
I mean, I can remember, plenty of discussions here in Rock Hill when we had three high schools. Oh, well, they got this and we don't have this. Blah, blah, blah. Back and forth.
I lived that here when I worked here, so I remember it very, very well.
So how are you handling this thing called education, since you're 70% of your time is on COVID, 30% is on this bond referendum? How are the kids doing?
The kids are doing an amazing job. Honestly, a lot of credit goes to our fabulous principals, assistant principals. Our teachers are amazing, our teacher assistants. We are well-staffed in Clover, and I was sharing with you earlier, you know, yes, we took some learning losses in our data in some places, but our high school data was very, very strong. Our graduation rate is over 91% from last year. So, you know, our kids are resilient, and our families are supportive, and for that, I'm very thankful.
But as you pointed out, you've had to take a large chunk of the extra federal dollars. If you add the two together, you're well over $9 million that you're basically using the bulk of for lost learning.
Absolutely. And I think those strategies we're putting in place are going to make a big, big difference. We put a math interventionist at every school because we saw the greatest learning loss in math. You know, if you're not at school every day doing the ritual of math is one of those things you got to practice.
Drill, drill, drill.
Yeah, kids lost some ground there. So I think the math interventionists, we put school psychologists in every building because our kids need to know that they're cared for and that the services that we can provide to make sure that their social-emotional health is strong as well is important. We absolutely felt that we needed more digital materials so that kids had access to the best reading materials when they were at home having to do some learning from home, so we put some funds into that. Really excited about summer school on either side, so we ran summer school for every grade level this summer. We'll run it again next summer so that we can extend the learning time for kids who need it. Paid our teachers pretty well, paid them double what they normally get paid, and our teachers rose to the occasion and taught all summer. So we really never closed this summer.
Now you say you paid them double. You mean that you gave them an increase of double what they normally
make? Doubled what they normally make in summer school, not double their salary. I wish I could do that. They deserve it. But
So as I mentioned to you before, most people don't realize that no matter what all these COVID problems are you've had, you're still expected as a school district to meet the state standards. Otherwise, you get dinged when it comes to revenue.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll get an accountability report card this year that has all of the same test scores. It's so interesting last year because we had a number of our virtual kids. We had 1,700 of those who opted out of testing. And some opted in, but because they were allowed, we saw that for the first time. So we are missing some data elements on some kids that we really needed.
But I thought it was interesting. You said those 1,700 kids that were out, only 170 are going to be out this year, right?
That's right. We only have 170 kids learning virtually.
Dr. Sheila Quinn, thanks for all that you do. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
The bond referendum.
Thank you very much.
And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And again, fresh subs and salads 7 days a week here at Substation 2. Dr. Quinn, join me at the count of three. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.